The power of education in this Marxist age. Today we discuss education as power. We discuss the Ontario Teachers Federation and their tremendous amount of power. And Tim tells us that the whole thing needs to be burned to the ground. Not me, I'd never say that. And I think homeschooling and cooperative schooling are the way to go, whether you like it or not. I'm Michael Thiessen with Tim Tyso, and this is Liberty Dispatch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. I'm Tim and he's Mike, and it's good to be with you again. Thanks for tuning into the show. Thanks for listening. Please, if you're new, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at the Liberty Coalition Canada. There you will find most of our videos, although they're being censored and scrubbed, and it's hard to know what's going up there. And check us out on Rumble at the Liberty Coalition Canada. That's where you'll find the video episodes of this podcast. Please subscribe to our iTunes, our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Podbean. And please don't forget to give us that rating. A lot of you have been doing that, and it's pumped the show up, and we were really grateful for that. So thanks again for supporting the show. Today, we're talking about education. Mike, why are we talking about education today in the middle of a global pandemic?
The reason why we're talking about education is because the Ontario Teachers Federation is using both the nature of education, which is in of itself power, and they are using their own position within that powerful system to self-serve. And so let's just start with the first idea that education is power. So Abraham Lincoln once said, "The philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next." Education and a training system in and of itself wields tremendous power as it shapes thought. And if you control the education system, you control the thinking of the next generation, but you also have you wield a significant tennis racket in the room to try to convince everybody how important you are because you're an influencer.
Right. So get a little bit deeper into this idea of power. Take us through what Karl Marx said about education and its place in forming a society.
Yeah. So the Manifesto of the Communist Party, written by Marx and Engels in 1848, utilizes education actually in such a significant way to attempt to overthrow the traditional family. They actually talked about their goal of the traditional family vanishing, and that education for all children from the moment they can leave their mother's care in national establishments at national costs. And so it kind of, in that statement, which is a goal-oriented statement that children would be educated from the moment they can leave their mothers until their adulthood, they tip their hat to the fact that they're actually believing education to be more powerful than the traditional family if it is given the opportunity to be.
Right. And you can see there how there's a competitive nature between state education and family education. And the communist authors are taking aim at the greatest rival of the state. That's what we want you to see right here in this opening part of the episode. State education, in its first conception, took direct aim at the quote unquote nuclear family, the traditional family, because it's its greatest competitor. It's a protection for children against the forces of culture that are moving, you know, violently in the public square. The family is an insulator. It's a place for safe education. And we're going to get into that a little bit more, but there's a reason why Karl Marx and Frederick Engels took aim at the traditional family.
And I just want to unpack that a little bit. Here in Canada, it was Egerton Ryerson who really lobbied for education across the masses and for the nation to get involved with that. But you're absolutely right, Tim, that even with people who have great intentions for education, education is so powerful that if it goes against the traditional teachings of the family, it will overthrow the family. Or that is both the danger, and then with more malice intent, that is the plan. And what we are seeing is in Canada right now, certainly the execution of more malicious intent towards the family. Certainly when we look at the health and sex ed curriculum that was released in 2015. So the first part of this section, and the reason why we're talking about this, is education is itself power. Once somebody realizes that they wield power with it, then they want to do two things. They want to keep their power for their own self-serving, and then they want to push a worldview upon the next generation. And the second part can be totally helpful to the family or harmful, but it is and of itself a power. And it's just such an important thing for us to be talking about when we get to our final point.
Right. Power is inevitable. Power structures are inevitable. And although we live in a society that's increasingly egalitarian, which means there's a desire to crush all power structures, it's impossible to do so, because power in and of itself is something God created, and it's in the world for good. Now, it can be abused on both sides of the political spectrum. But that's what we want to emphasize, is a tremendous amount of power has been given to public educators because of the nature of their job, which is shaping the next generation and coloring their worldview to create something. All of these kids in the public education system will come out and they will create or be a part of something. The question is, what is the future we're giving them? And to Mike's point, what we're seeing right now is the teachers, federations, and unions are wielding this power in a tremendous fashion for, as Mike said, and it's a bit of an accusation that I hope we're going to back up, that they're wielding it for personal gain, not for the well-being of children. Mike, where are you seeing that? How can we justify that accusation, that their interests are for themselves and not necessarily for the betterment and the uplifting of students? Where are we seeing that?
Well, we're seeing it in two areas. And again, we are now entering into the world of attacking a system or speaking to a system. And that is going to inevitably draw out from it people who are offended because they love to teach children. They love to show them their worldview, and they have no malicious intent towards the family. But what's happening right now is, because that power is being wielded, what you see is the Teachers Federation of Ontario arguing for their own personal security and harming the children and families that they say they serve in order to do so. So number one, they're lobbying for smaller classroom sizes, which you and I would both agree in many respects is a good educational aspiration.
Absolutely.
If I've got a one-on-one teacher, I'm at my best pupil to teacher ratio. But the reality of it is we see even in some of their most recent petitions that what they're really concerning about is the public education system itself. They ask a question in one of their change.org petitions. Ontario demands better reduce class sizes to keep schools and communities safe. So in the name of COVID, they've got this change.org petition. But here's what the petition says. Is the government counting on this plan to achieve smaller class sizes? Because parents with means will do so by pulling their children out of school for at-home or private options.
So that statement, Mike, right there, we just want to park there for a minute. So important. Because what they're saying is that class sizes are a problem. And as you and I would agree, it's true. Having 30 children in a class is not as ideal an environment for learning as smaller class size. The point is, in the name of COVID now, we need smaller class sizes in order to remain safe. This has been an argument for a generation that class sizes need to shrink. This is not a new argument or a new lobby. The funny part is that they claim that the class sizes are too large because of the schools are dramatically underfunded. When you're the second largest expenditure in the budget, you're not underfunded, you're mismanaged. And so just putting that aside, let's look at this accusation that the government's plan to reduce is not to put more money, it's to wait for parents to pull their children out. Parents of means or of financial means, pulling their kids out and giving them alternative educational opportunities. And the teachers are criticizing that, saying, well, that's not a good enough approach because these parents with money, we need them advocating for the system. So even if class sizes do shrink because students are drawn out of the system, that doesn't make them happy.
Yeah.
Because so go ahead. It doesn't make them happy, which makes you ask, well, isn't class size the bottom line? Why isn't that good enough?
Right, which is the final part of the statement in parentheses saying, thereby undermining our public education system. So the reality of it is that children, because education is power, the government pays teachers and the Teachers Federation to educate them, however that works out. Through the school boards and however. So it's all mixed together. And so on one hand, if the goal was to reduce class sizes, and let's say that COVID-19 did reduce class sizes because people wanted to keep their kids at home, that's not good enough because there is a dollar figure attached to each child. Now, if that dollar figure goes with the child into the private home education or into the private options, then all of a sudden teachers are wanting their cake and trying to eat it too. They want smaller classroom sizes, but they also want they want parents to have no option but to choose their education. And they're leveraging this known power of education, which is now monetized because education is so valuable to us that we pay for people to do it. And they're leveraging that to get what they want. And what they want is smaller classroom sizes, but all the more resources and staffing to do it without any other option outside of that. And that reveals their motives. Their motives are to protect the public education system rather than to revamp it or to allow people to choose realistic alternatives that are better than the current public education system.
Mike, really important point that you make about stabilizing the system through dollar amounts, but I just want to point out that it's not just dollars they're after. It's not just money in the system to protect it. One of their driving motivations is uniformity of the system, and it's uniform acceptance and participation in the system. And this is one fantastic example. This is not from Canada, but this is from California. You can draw a lot of comparisons to Ontario and California, not just the fact that Northern California and Southern Ontario are at the same latitude. That's interesting, but politically, we are much more similar than first meets the eye. And there's this fantastic report that came out of Los Angeles fantastic, I mean, for the purpose of illustrating this point. It's actually horrendous. The United Teachers Los Angeles Union called for, and these were their demands, for reopening their schools post-COVID, or reopening their schools in the midst of COVID. So you would think they were talking about air ventilators or extra hand sanitizer, or no, these were their demands. They called for the defunding of police in exchange for opening their schools.
Right. I saw this article. Yep. Very concerning.
So defunding of the police, that's one way they think that it's going to keep children safe during COVID-19 and teachers. A moratorium on new charter schools. So the elimination of choice, the elimination of a variety of options outside of the purely state-run education system. New wealth taxes on California's millionaires and billionaires, and Medicare for all at the federal level. These are their demands for reopening the school. They have political demands because they are a political body. And the same goes for up here in Ontario. And if you look at Ontario or Canadian curriculums across the country, there is a uniform demand for sexuality, relativism. And they are pushing this to the lowest ages they have access to. And believe me when I tell you, they are fearful of the opportunity that children have outside of the state system to escape these ideologies, because their demand and their goal is educational uniformity. That's how you shape the future.
As I was listening to it, I was thinking, all of the teachers that I know are going to be saying, that's not me.
Fair enough.
The reality, though, is that it is them, because this is what we're talking about. The Teachers Federation of Ontario knows that education is power, wields education as power, and teachers, silent, often by or silenced by their union or by the Ministry of Education, are being pushed along this agenda. So when you say the word there, you and I are talking to the left activist side of things, where people are looking to secure the system and then to secure their own political outcomes. But the whole system, because education is so powerful, and because the teachers union or the Federation of Teachers has so much power, they silence any type of dissenting voice in the same way that other dissenting voices are being silenced in Canada. So what you're saying there is absolutely true, Tim. The vocal minority plus the silent majority of educators are letting a whole shift of political thought and ideologies come into the school system. And they're both doing it because education is going to shape no matter what. And they want to be the people who do it, regardless of whether they're going to do it just to keep their jobs or whether or not they're trying to keep their jobs and have an activist voice in this coming cultural relativism, this, you know, this conflict theory, conflict ideology theory, that type of stuff.
Yeah. And the thing that the context here is important is because it's COVID-19 that has shone a surgical grade light on all of these worldviews. It is exposing so much. When teachers unions are making demands about defunding police and about all these ideologies in exchange for reopening, because our culture understands education is the silver bullet, when these institutions make demands for their special interests, we as a public, we are unarmed to defend ourselves.
And they're doing
because our
it,
kids are being held hostage.
They're doing it dishonestly. All the teachers are like, see, you need public education because you're an idiot. They're doing it dishonestly. They're saying we want smaller numbers to keep everybody safe. But then if you go to the extreme and say, well, to keep everybody safe would be to put them online or to allow them to go to smaller private schools or for parents to have choice to educate. They go, no. That would dismantle the system.
It's the wrong ideological solution.
And it's the wrong monetary solution. They know they have a gold mine in the fact that education is power. And what we need to is to recognize that education is power. And so we need to recognize that in order to retake the minds of our children, we have to think about education differently and the delivery of education differently. And then number two, we have to realize that education is power. And like you said, we are being held hostage by these educators who are saying, yep, we're just going to stop doing it unless you do it on our agenda and at to the tune of the dollar that we are satisfied with. And that is why Tim Tyso, in his own words today, has said on the podcast right now, he's going to burn the education system to the ground. I love it how you just said that.
You're right, Mike. And we're going to go there. And I love that you just quoted me as saying that. Homeschooling rates. Surveys done in the United States and Canada are showing that the rate of homeschooling has more than doubled from about 5.5% to over 11%. Why is this happening? Because parents are looking on at the disgrace of a system that is left in the wake of these COVID-19 lockdowns and then the ensuing demands the teachers are making before reopening. Now, before you jump into, well, homeschooling is an artifact of like, you know, it was big in the 90s or, you know, it's such an old school, you know, we need to move forward away from that.
How are you trying to position homeschooling as a, it's not your grandparents for, like, how are you positioning homeschooling as the old thing, like the old trend? No. Well, other than my haircut, homeschoolers are like the new hipster with skinny jeans and coffee. How are you even positioning it that way, Timothy?
Well, I'm it's called devil's advocate. This is what we want to present as a solution. We don't want to just be here criticizing and throwing stones. We want to offer solutions. And my wife and I started homeschooling before lockdown started. Okay. Before it was cool. But it did coincide with the year of the lockdown. It was just a couple months that we pulled our kids out of a good Christian school and we started homeschooling. I cannot tell you the transformation in my children with their behavior together, their interest in home life, their interest in each other, it was incredible transformation. And this is not a product of my wife and I being brilliant, scholarly classical educators. It has everything to do with proximity to the parent and proximity to the family unit and proximity to the belief system of their parents and finding security in that. And I just want to share, a scripture. And if you're not a Christian listening to this episode, that's great. But we want to invite you to listen as to what our philosophy of education is and why we believe it works so well. Hear, O Israel, this is from Deuteronomy 6. The Lord, our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. This is it. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets on your forehead and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and your gate. So what is being demonstrated here is that education, the whole worldview of a child should be delivered, and this is what we're talking about, the delivery system, should be delivered from the home. That's not to discount homes compiling together and creating, you know, cooperative schooling opportunities and that, but the point is that these are alternatives to the state education system where instead of learning in the home, your children are sent away and they come back alienated from the home unit. What we're proposing is a system that actually constructs and binds together the family unit and from there creates a strong society of healthy families. And that's what we're doing. And a lot of folks around us have been doing that. And this is why it's a threat. Ask how many public teachers support homeschooling if it works for the family. I'd like to see a poll on that. Well, because it's not approved of by the state system.
Well, certainly not endorsed, right? Because like you said, it is a threat because children are seen as dollar figures and children are also seen as moldable students for their ideology. I want to comment on this, Tim. Number one, both the proximity of the child to their parent changes, and also the investment of the parent increases when we're talking about homeschooling and cooperative forms of education. And then at the same time, education also becomes a little bit different when you start seeing that so much of education is about the character of your child. And in that passage in Deuteronomy, when it's talking about impressing the commands of the Lord on your child, notice it doesn't say impress upon them algebra. It is this beautiful instruction of God's vision of life that we impress upon our children so that they become morally righteous acting characters, and they become responsible citizens. And you're able to integrate the hard sciences into that worldview shaping opportunity, into that worldview shaping time that you're with them. And I just want to also comment on the fact that, you know, the Christian schooling movement is a fantastic movement. There's been a rediscovery of the classical Christian education movement. In that movement, the movement has consistently stood on a three-legged stool with the partnership of the home, with the partnership of the educators, and the partnership of the church. So a three-legged stool. And even in that situation, so you and I are advocating for homeschooling. We've done it. We know it. We cooperate with other educators in the area, and we do quite well with our kids. Other people are more comfortable in a traditional type of school feel. So they're looking for something more formalized. Well, that can be done as long as the two things that we've been talking about remain the same. Number one, education is seen as education is power, and therefore the parents need to be involved in shaping that with so that it's powerful to manifest a wonderful worldview. And then number two, it has to be cost effective so that teachers can't hold your family hostage to doing what they want to do, even though you can't afford it and it's not good for your family. There's got to be some type of balance where education is completely revamped. And I think you and I just made a lot of enemies with this podcast. But the reason why it's important for the pandemic is because, number one, if you're sitting at home going, if the schools go online, or if they've got to go back with all of these constant threats that we're going to shut it down if it doesn't look safe, even though it has nothing to do with safety. It just has to do with the goals of the teachers, then you're going to be living in an up and down world. And if you're sitting at home going, I think maybe it's time for me to pull my kids from the public system. Again, Tim said it. I didn't. Pull your kids, live life, and don't worry about it. And then number two, I love it how you're just letting me. I love how you're just letting me literally say what I want to say.
Trash my reputation.
And I bet you it's going to work. Trashing my reputation. Somewhere someone's going to quote Tim Tyso.
That's right. They're going to flood the internet with this quote.
So if you're thinking of pulling your kids, pull them. And number two, if you're concerned about our public system, you're right. There is a great deal of concern. And if you're inside it, you're a teacher and you're really concerned with the leftist ideology, and you're also concerned with the major power that's being played to the detriment of children in order to just get what the unions or the Teachers Federation want. Hey, guess what? Go start your own school. Be an entrepreneur. We need great teachers offering great solutions. And then thirdly, if you want freedom for people to have choice of education, tell your local MPP, because they don't want to give it to you.
I think the moral of the end of this episode is you can do it. How many conversations I've had with people who say, I'd love to try it, but I just don't know if I can do it. And there's usually a second career in the home somewhere that they feel they cannot give up. Do you know what? You can. Make educating your children a career and you will be rewarded in spades, in riches. I mean, you'll have peace of mind. You'll have proximity to your children. And when we say power, it puts the power back in the hands of the family. How many parents out there feel like they are powerless over the direction of their kids' education, over the methodologies, over the agenda, and they feel like they're trying to be good citizens by just taking their hands off and saying, well, I guess this is what it takes.
That's such they're a good your point, children. Tim.
They're your children. And if you feel that it's wrong, they're your kids. Nothing's ever going to change that. They already came from you. They're your kids. So just want to encourage you. It's possible. You can do it. And Mike just provided three fantastic solutions and strategies if you're in any one of those positions today. Again, so if you're in any of these positions and you're looking for help, you can reach out. You can look at Ontario Home Educators Connection Programs. You can check Facebook groups. There's a lot of people banding together right now to find solutions and to improve the situation. And if you can get behind that and support it, you would be a great help. And there are people who feel the same way as you. There are people who are thinking like you, and they want to take back control and take back what's valuable to them. Mike, unless you have any final thoughts, we're going to wrap up the episode here. Thanks for listening to Liberty Dispatch. Thanks for joining the show. Again, please subscribe on YouTube or Rumble at the Liberty Coalition Canada. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Podbean, and share the show with your friends. And again, we've got great plans to expand the reach and frequency of this show. And we're excited to announce how you can partner with us to do that in the next couple of weeks. Mike, thanks for everything this week. Again, join us each week as we broadcast across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. This is Liberty Dispatch.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, working together for liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.